latest edition of Serie A Awesome. So Spezia have played their part in the title race, something we probably didn't expect to be saying this season. Inter are top of the league after Milan's loss to Spezia. And what a time it is for the Derby della Madonnina this weekend. Juve's loss to Napoli meant Inter have pulled even further away from another rival. And that result might just have saved Gattuso's job. We'll be talking about all of this, as well as Lorenzo Insigne being spot on, Roma still being up there, and much more. It is all on the way in Serie Awesome. Hello, welcome in. We have Nikki Bandini, Mina Rizzucchi, Matteo Bonetti, and myself, Kay Murray. And I have to say, it was actually hard to put the rundown together for this show because every single match seemed to affect the outcome of every single other match. And so what we're going to do is we're going to go chronologically. We're going to set up the match day best to demonstrate what was at stake on round 22, and especially because of the magnitudes of the matchups. So let's start with a big old game between Napoli and Juventus. It finished Napoli 1, Juventus 0. It was a game decided by a Lorenzo Insigne penalty. And let's talk about that penalty in itself, because it was all very layered. And Nikki, you're the one who brought up just a few weeks ago Lorenzo Insigne's penalty record against Juventus.
Yeah, well, he'd taken 3 and missed 3 against Juventus previously in his career, while missing no penalties anywhere else, I think like one of the last 12 or something. So he did have, we talked about it, this cloud hanging over him when it came to Juventus. We talked about the Supercoppa, was this a psychological issue? And look, it's a penalty, it's a moment, it's something very brief in a game. But when this opportunity arose, he stepped up and he took it very confidently. It was a good penalty. It wasn't just like, oh, he got lucky. It was a nice penalty. And it was one that I think Juventus just didn't need to give away. It was a silly gesture from Chiellini throwing his hand into Chiellini's face, and it ended up being the whole game.
Pirlo called it dubious.
It's not
Pirlo didn't agree with the penalty decision. Matteo doesn't agree with Pirlo.
Okay, since when can you swat your hand out in the age of VAR, by the way, and it was a correct call from the beginning? You cannot extend your hand like that in your arm and poke someone's eye out inside the boxes or the closest player to the actual path of the ball. I didn't understand how it could be dubious at all. Even Ravanelli came out and said, "Ah, that's not a penalty." And people were saying, "Oh, it's Juve, so there's these occasions that because we're Juve, give me a break." Like, that's always a penalty. And I know that in the past, and people are making the case of, "Oh, in the 80s when I played, in the 90s when I played." You're not playing right now in 2021. In 2021, that's a penalty. You know what else they didn't have in the 80s is color TVs for everyone in the world. So give me a break with this. Oh, in my day, in your day, things change, things evolve. They update the rules and the laws every single year for VAR to look at, and the handball, and what's considered what's considered a handball inside the box, or what's considered a penalty inside the box. So this is an ever-changing system that the referees have. That is a penalty all day long. I can't believe that we're even talking about there being a controversy, because it isn't. It is objectively a penalty, and a silly one to give up as well, given that Rachmani was nowhere even near the ball. Szczęsny was going to have that ball covered the entire time. Rachmani basically was under Szczęsny.
Mimi, you found out it might actually be a generational thing, watching the game with people from different generations.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I also watched the game yesterday with an older crew as well. And they were both like, how is that a penalty? There was no intent. And I was like, well, the guy's been clipped from behind. And like with Chiellini, I was like, it's a stonewall penalty. But it is, like Matteo said, it's the age of VAR. And it's like no one wants to accept that VAR has changed, not changed the rules, just perhaps clarified them in a way that you can't get away with things that Chiellini used to get away with a lot. And he's especially one of those defenders that did get away with many of those things. And so in this day and age, defending has to be so refined. And I mean, I think it's a weird thing. It's like you said, it's the older you get, the more that you're convinced that these things are no longer penalties. Having said that, I think in the game, people love to say, well, it was dull in the first half, and perhaps overall you couldn't have seen, Juventus were the better club. No, they weren't. Napoli was so good at playing a cynical game, which is exactly what we have talked about on this podcast, is the fact that sometimes they're always so beautiful, they're not efficient enough, they don't do enough of the bad stuff to get them places. And I like that they could play a dirty game in this way. I looked at that back line and I thought to myself, no, know, Manolas, no Koulibaly, you know, Maximovic and Rahmani. I was worried for them myself. I'm thinking you're up against Morata and Ronaldo. They had Morata locked in. Ronaldo couldn't shoot for, I don't know what happened in this match. Chiellini, the veteran who had fortified the defense, gave away the penalty. So it is a year of complete unpredictability. But I'm really happy for Gattuso in the sense that, you know, this was a game in which I thought that they really played like a team. Now, when you watch them in the Coppa Italia against Atalanta, this is where I tell you that I had no hope for them because they acted all on an individual level. It seemed like they weren't following instructions. No one was sacrificing. No one was covering. And there was a lot of pointing going on. You cover this guy. You take care of that guy. What are you doing? But in this match, I thought that they actually came together. They didn't perhaps play the Napoli way, but they did enough to get the 3 points. And that's all I want from them.
I disagree, Mina. I have to say, just watching back that game, Napoli were very, very lucky because since when does Cristiano Ronaldo miss a half volley at the edge of the 6-yard box? Morata had another golden chance. There was 3 shots inside the box. And for Ronaldo's case, just about a meter away from Meret, that went right into Meret's belly. Those are chances that Ronaldo would put away in his sleep that he would never miss. Yes, Rahmani and Maximovic, they did well given how poor Maximovic has been. Rahmani was only making his second start since coming over from Hellas Verona without Koulibaly and Manolas. I thought that was going to be a huge vulnerable state. Mario Rui was getting torched in the first half by Juan Cuadrado.
Coming in last minute for Ospina.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Meret's a good goalkeeper. Very different, right? Ospina's better with the ball at his feet. Meret is a very good shot stopper. But, I mean, those were shots that went straight at him from incredible positions. I thought Napoli's defense did well. But it's because there were so many crosses into the box and Rahmani won a lot of them. But the ones that they weren't able to deal with led to really great Juventus chances. And were one half volley from Ronaldo away from that position that would have gone in from suddenly saying that Gattuso's out or that the job is 100% being questioned.
Juventus's offense, is what, the 6th best in the league. And really, at this moment in time, we're talking about Ronaldo or bust, right? So why not just try to take your chances? But I think as a centre-back partnership for a team that's been hit a lot by injury, I thought they did really well against this side. You're right, they were lucky. They saved a lot of their opportunities. I think what I'm more excited about for them is that on this occasion, they did sacrifice themselves for the good of that. If we're talking about beautiful play, Lazio were better. You know, like there's been many games in which teams that have played better football don't even get to where they are. But I think at the end of the day, if you're willing to act like a team and sacrifice yourself, which I don't think Napoli do a lot, then it makes a difference. But this is where I have this issue when it comes to Insigne. You know, like now everyone is talking about Insigne being the guy that scored this wonderful penalty. And I got really irritated by, please, can I read to you what the agent said? And I want
please
to see
do.
If you guys get as angry as I did from reading this. Check this out. The love for Napoli gave Insigne the courage to take that penalty kick against Juventus. Wait, hold on. So basically you're saying that if he didn't feel the love for Napoli, he wouldn't have taken a penalty as the captain of Napoli against Juventus, the team that you're trying to beat to collect 3 points. I'm just asking you, like, do you need to feel
okay,
the love
so,
of
so
Napoli?
Do you not think that maybe he's saying because of what's happened in the previous game when he had to take a penalty against Juventus or previous games, plural, as we were mentioning, that he's saying that it's because he loves them, he still stepped up and thought he could do this?
So otherwise, you know, like as a coward, he should have, you know, we totally would have understood if he wanted to take this away. He's the captain. He's not a regular player for Napoli. He's the captain. So if you're a captain, do you always step up, or do you have to be like loving your team so much to want to step up and be a man and take the penalty? So I'm saying, like, when we sit there and we talk about
why do you think he took it?
How's
then,
this
Mina?
Turn into a negative from Insigne?
No, I like
no. This is because
why do you?
No,
think
no, no. Let me go into this because this is why. I feel so sorry for Gattuso, yeah? Because you're in charge of teams where the captain has to feel all the love in the world to take a penalty for you against a team he never scores against, yeah? So, okay. So then we talk about this, and then we talk Gazette. This is what they wrote just after the game. The final hug between the coach and the captain was a beautiful image. It also served to dispel the suspicion that the relationship was not working between the two. This hug, by the way, has been something that has been a thread throughout Insigne's career at Napoli. Let me read to you, in 24th of October 2019, when he hugged Carlo Ancelotti. There is a frame this time. the two have, the hug definitively closed the relationship between Carlo Ancelotti and Lorenzo Insigne and any suspicion. It is what immortalizes the two of them in a strong hug after a winning goal scored by the forward at the Red Bull Arena. And it's worth more than 1,000 words. November 2015. After the match between Verona and Napoli, Conte had left out Insigne for the national team. The embrace between Sarri and Insigne is a symbol of harmony, and he has come together with Sarri, who wasn't expecting the hug. So basically, what we're saying is, unless he's good enough and happy enough to feel the love and hug his coach, then Napoli are basically doomed to relegation and madness.
Is he a problem, or is his agent that influential, even with the journalists, maybe, in the Italian media?
Scaroni wasn't his agent all the time, was he? I mean, it's just constantly this guy who's either crying when he misses a penalty, has to hug the coach so that the whole of Napoli feels
I don't know how
together.
This has become a negative all of a sudden. What am I missing here?
I look at this because this is what I'm telling you about Napoli. Like, you are a team that is trying to win Scudetto. You are a team that's challenging for the top four. If your captain is crying and then needing to feel the love to step up to take a penalty, and you've got teams that have Lukaku and Ronaldo and Ibrahimovic, how can you ever challenge? Tell me. How can you ever challenge when your captain is needing to hug the coach so that you don't get relegated?
But we're criticizing him for crying now, because Insigne
grew up
Napolitano. He's a Napoli legend. He should be heaped praise upon, because let's not forget the Italian media, the worldwide, the whole theme the last month or so was that his mentality was weak because of the three missed penalties against Juventus.
It is
right?
Weak, Matteo. Yeah.
How can it be weak when he stepped
he's
up and he said, right?
You and the guy is still crying after a missed penalty in a Super Coppa. It's not
course,
even
it's a massive moment because he loves the team. Like, I have no problem with grown men crying about their team. This is more than just a sport for them or a job. This is their passion. He grew up with the Napoli colors. Of course, he's going to feel emotional because he knew that he had a massive chance to eliminate Juventus from the Supercoppa final and get a trophy to the Napoli cabinet. And despite all the reports in the media about questioning his mentality, is it weak? Is it because it's Juventus and it's the biggest club in Italy in the last decade since he's been in Napoli? He stepped up the penalty spot. And from the way he struck the ball, that was his reminder to say, how dare any of you call my mentality weak? Because that is a penalty.
Well
of someone
done. One in four. You managed it. You weak.
Blasted it into the top corner. No, but it's the way that he took it as well. You can tell that was a penalty with a little bit of anger as well. He's a Napoli legend. He scored 100 goals for the club.
Oh, yeah, we missed that. It was his 100th goal.
Yeah, but there's no chance that we can question this guy's mentality. I almost feel like he's underrated at this point, Lorenzo Insigne.
Nikki, help us out, please.
I was going to say, shall I go? Because I don't know if I need
it. Do you know what, though, Nikki? It is interesting about the hug, because we did see hugs from not just him, from other Napoli players, which shows that Gattuso does seemingly have the support of his players. And he said after the game that he'd always felt supported by them.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think without reigniting that fight, there's some validity in both positions. I do think that the hug thing, look, we're all guilty of this. And to me, when Mina was going through those, first of all, amazing research. But secondly, I was thinking, isn't that just a bit because all of us as journalists sort of see something happen and we build narratives on top of it. So actually, it's not Insigne who said, look at this hug. It's a journalist who said, look at this hug. So some of that is our fault as well as journalists. We do that all the time with stories. I did watch it, and as a person, rather than as a football story, I felt happy for Gattuso. It was hard not to, okay? He's had a really rough few weeks. And I think, of course, because I'm doing it on everything with this conversation, I do fall slightly between your views on the performance. I thought Juventus definitely had those chances, but to me, this was a lot the other side of that coin we've talked about the last few weeks of, okay, but is this team really creating great football? Maybe it doesn't matter. Take three shots against Roma and win because you've got Ronaldo taking those shots. Well, if that plan doesn't work and Ronaldo doesn't take his shots, what's your plan? Which is a little bit the discouraging side of this from Juventus for me, but certainly for Gattuso, he's such an honest manager. He talks so frankly in his press conferences about what's going on. He does it in a way that I find very disarming, because everyone lies in football all the time. He's so upfront that when you see him having that moment of everyone jumping on him, it's hard not to feel good for him.
I just wanted to address one thing you said, which is, you know, perfect in what you were talking about, like, as in we do add to the narrative of what it is. I guess my issue with this is the fact that the in those three cases where he needed to go and hug Sarri in 2015 and Ancelotti in 2019, and now in 2021, it's almost like there's always been these problems with Insigne and the club where he has been criticised, where there's talk of a potential disruption in the relationship between player and coach. And there's always this hug and this embrace that needs to be captured on in you know, images spread across, you know, the Gazzetta or Corriere dello Sport headlines in order to dispel this idea. The fact that there's always these possible tensions going on between this particular player and coach is what makes me think, again, you are the captain. We don't need to go this far. You should be on there. You should be the number one fan. Since you cry for this club, maybe, you know, let's not have any tension going forward. And maybe you can hug Ancelotti on day one and just listen to the dude.
I think that's a really fascinating point you've just raised there, Mina, which there's a direct parallel in my head as you're saying all of that with Francesco Totti at Roma. If you are the guy who was from that city, who was the captain, who was always destined to take on that job, I'm not saying that this is inevitable at all, but is there something in just that like storyline that builds that's partly you and your character, because I think you can draw some parallels even in their characters, Insigne and Totti, and partly also just the way a city treats you right from your beginnings as a footballer, the way that everything is built up around you. I think it's what you're talking about, different managers and this repeating story. God, we had that with Totti for a long time at Roma. Oh, is Totti okay with the manager? That was the story of his last 10 years there almost.
This is actually a really interesting path that this is taking, because these are two players, Lorenzo Insigne, and especially Francesco Totti, right? That could have gone on to bigger clubs. Totti could have gone to La Liga and his career maybe would have been seen in a completely different light. Maybe he would be talked about as one of the greatest players of all time instead of, you know, the greatest player in Roma history, one of the best players in Serie A. But he's even said it himself that his career could have taken a different path had he left. But there's such an emotional tie between Insigne and Napoli and Totti at Roma that you feel that it's all fire, passion, right? It's more than just a job or collecting a paycheck, especially with the mercenaries that we see now in world football, that it's not really about the colors as much as it is about the contract that you're offered. But it never really felt that way for Lorenzo Insigne, because he has the talent to play in most clubs, right? He could have moved on to Juventus. He could have moved on to a lot, you know, bigger clubs that are consistently in the Champions League, but he stayed put. So I feel like the way that they view the club, and maybe if there is a bit of discord, and the Ancelotti situation, that was the whole team. There was a coup, right? There was docked wages. So that was much more than just Lorenzo Insigne and Ancelotti. That was a squad. That was a whole squad. Remember, there was a lot of players that were part of this disruption midway through the season.
So let's get to some Juve takeaways, because obviously we've talked a lot about Napoli. We have half mentioned a few of them. But Mina, I've got a question for you here about why there's suddenly been a bit of an Alvaro Morata backlash from Juventini. I know there's 4 Serie A goals in 17 appearances, but I feel like one day they're praising him and now suddenly, maybe it's just me, but I've been noticing criticism towards him for his performances of late.
I don't know. Maybe we can swap him with Insigne. I mean, you know, he's a better player, right? I don't know. Compare him to
that's
Totti.
Fair, actually.
Are you crazy? Like, Totti's God. Insigne, Totti.
I'm not comparing the talent, but you understand what I was saying.
And I was not saying that they're equivalent.
No,
comparison at all. The comparison is about what
when you're a captain and how much you get.
The links to the city.
Morata, I think that this is a problem that we should bring up, because we've talked about, you know, how good Gattuso has done. We talked about, you know, Chiellini not doing well in defence and Ronaldo not doing well in attack. But at the end of the day, you have to question Pirlo. I mean, I'm sometimes thrilled with him, and there are times where I'm just like, what are you doing here? And when you look over this, you think it's 32 games that he has taken charge of, and there's been 32 different formations. So the game has developed from being quite vertical to a little bit more balanced to sometimes completely defensive, like we saw, for example, in the Coppa Italia against Inter. So I think that when you are playing a very vertical game, it suits Morata a lot. And especially when you have that quick release in midfield, when you have McKennie winning the ball high up the pitch, delivering, and then it can go to Morata and then bam into Ronaldo. And I think that when the ball moves very quickly, Morata will always do very well, which is why under Allegri, he was used as almost just the counter-attacking man, especially against games like, you know, Bayern Munich, for example. I think now when the game is developing under Pirlo, it becomes harder. It also becomes harder when he's not playing in every match, when sometimes Kulusevski is picked over this, when I do think he should be playing every match because he's the only forward right now that's available. So I am a little bit upset sometimes when he is not playing and when he's not starting. Having said that, injuries have gotten in the way and he hasn't always been available. Another thing that obviously bothers me a lot about him is how much he doesn't take a chance and tries to deliver instead to Ronaldo. Like there's some sort of fear about him there. And he needs to sort of step up and act like he has an ego of his own and he doesn't just need to provide for other people. If the chance is open to him, take it. I think this is what something you'll find when you have a big star on your team is that you always end up working for this big star and sometimes it comes at the detriment of the team. But I think it's very harsh to criticize him because he is the top scorer in the Champions League for Juventus. Champions League is starting tonight for Juve. So I don't want to go too far into this because Juventini being a club that just loves to criticize everything, they're always going to have someone to complain about. Just like I do when I see Pjanic and think, thank God we have Arthur now, you know?
There's a new name.
No comment on Bernardeschi starting.
And that's another thing.
Never seen a player
you
that
go
is
for it.
So lost on confidence that treats the ball like a hot potato that he's this player has been sapped of any sort of inner not even inner strength, but inner confidence that he had at Fiorentina, where he was one of my favorite players. He was someone that would dribble past you, someone that could create his own shot. And you see him now at Juventus, and he's just this shell of his former self where he gets the ball and he doesn't even want to try any of the things he did at Fiorentina anymore. He just wants to get rid of it. Yeah. I can't believe he's still at the club. He needs to leave. It's the best thing for both parties. You have Kulusevski on the bench. You had Weston McKennie on the bench. There's two midfielder things not working for Juventus when they do go back to it. We've seen Juve at their best when they have three central midfielders, when they have more balance as well. Kulusevski, I think, has to be there over. I couldn't read any fitness issues. I didn't see why he wasn't starting, and it was Bernardeschi. But Bernardeschi is someone who doesn't really have a future at the club. But it's just I've never seen a player who is so polar opposite to the player that he was at his former club. It is almost it's really depressing to see.
Yeah,
because this was a highly rated guy. This was a $45 million signing. Who now you see him and you're like, he just doesn't want to try anything anymore. He just gets rid of the ball the second that they pass it to him. I feel for the guy.
Is he scared to make a mistake?
I mean, that's the only explanation I have, but I really just think it's a confidence issue.
He's also very good.
Yeah, that's the thing. On the national team, that's the Fiorentina version of Bernardeschi. Yes. And at Juventus, it's just not working out for him. Just he has to leave. He has to go to a smaller club where he can be one of the main guys because it's over for him. It's five seasons now and it's time to go.
And then came Milan against Spezia. And a win for the leaders would have put 10 points between themselves and Juve after Juve's loss. But it finished Spezia 2, Milan 0. Milan failing to capitalize because they came up, Matteo, against a Speziale side. But before we get into the praise for Spezia, what happened to Milan here? Because even Pioli said this is the first deserved defeat of the season for his side.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would agree with that either from Stefano Pioli. But the other comments from Pioli that I found interesting were, if you watched us midweek, if you watched the way that my boys trained and how good we were, you would have thought that we would have blown Spezia out of the water. That would have been a completely different result. There's no, and I know we try to explain everything, but there's some games that are so difficult to truly analyze because there's such an anomaly. And I feel like this is exactly what it is. This isn't a pattern of things to come. And we can, you know, be all doom and gloom and say, oh, the real Milan's back now. But that is absolutely crazy talk, given the few months that Milan have just had with so many players out in every single department. They've had Zlatan Ibrahimovic out for like half the games in Serie A. They were missing Ismail Benacer, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, their top defenders. They needed to use a fullback in Kalulu as a center back as an emergency cover. They were without Donnarumma for a few games. Milan now have gotten most of their best players back. They had their top defense in Kjaer and Romagnoli. They had Benacer back, who's one of the best holding midfielders in the league, alongside Kessié. They had Çalhanoğlu back, who was actually really poor in this game. And Ibrahimovic leading the line. So you look at it and say, right, if Milan were to have a slump, it would have come already in the last few months, because I don't think we're going to see them having that much of an injury crisis or the COVID cases than they had already this season. And they kept winning. And you know, this is something that you can look at in 2014 to 2019 and say, right, this is why Milan couldn't finish top four, because they would lose points against all these bottom teams. But I'm not going to, you know, give the hot take right away and say, oh, this is a sign of things to come. I think this was an anomaly against a surprisingly good Spezia side that makes no sense, because Milan were nearly full strength. And I just can't see them repeating this, because what we've seen now for 12 months straight, this isn't just good form for 2 months. This is 12 months of solid evidence that Milan are a changed team that know how to battle through adversity. And I think this was just a one-off.
I don't know if I agree with you anymore. I think I've been with that same thought as you over the recent couple of blips that Milan have had. And look, I'm not predicting Milan to completely fall apart and disappear from the top part of the table. But it is now, what is it, four defeats in 2021? It's more than they'd had. I mean, this was a team that didn't lose for like a whole year. This game, they had not a single shot on target, which is the first time in 18 months that's happened. I don't think the wheels have suddenly come off and this is completely ruined as a team. But I think maybe this has been a club that was, to, at least to be top, we're talking about top rather than top four for a moment, was defying gravity, was exceeding our expectations, was doing something that seemed so implausible, frankly, with the resources they had. Say again, the youngest average starting team in the league, by a distance as well, actually. I think the recent performances have been worse. And I think maybe you even saw some awareness of that in Pioli's rush to get Bennacer back into the team. I love Bennacer. I think he was brilliant for them for a really, really long period. And I understand wanting him back in the team, but frankly, this game passed him by. He was not good. And that makes me raise the question of whether that was rushed. I thought the absence of Calabria on the right-hand side was also really felt. I don't know, Matteo. I think this performance was not an outlier.
But
can I read you what they've got ahead?
Yeah, please do.
Because there could be trouble ahead here. You've got the two legs against Red Star. Inter will be doing a preview on the derby coming up. Roma, Udinese, Hellas Verona, Napoli and Fiorentina.
I think Inter's going to win the derby and I think they're going to extend their lead at the top of the table, but it's still a very long season. Milan finishing in the top four is still something that anyone would have signed on the dotted line. And just to go back to Nikki's point, this is the first game where they were thoroughly outclassed and outplayed. So I agree with Stefano Pioli in that sense. But in the Juventus game, where you talk about the other matches, they dropped points. Okay, they dropped points against an Atalanta side that was brilliant in that run of form, that they were beating everybody without Papu Gomez. They lost against Juventus, but I thought they played really well against Juventus. I didn't think they were second best that day to the Bianconeri. This is the first time that we've genuinely seen Milan play poorly, not create anything whatsoever. And you're right, they rushed Bennacer back because Tonali hasn't been playing. Meite and Kessié, you're losing so much creativity, especially when Çalhanoğlu was out as well. But they're coming back from a serious injury. So they got the rust out of the way is what Milan fans would hope. But I just can't see them, based on now a large sample size of games, I just can't see this continuing. I really can't.
Well, I have to say, I actually agree with you, Matteo, because when I look at the losses that they've had, I know it's...
You too, I know. mark this moment
like
down.
Cat and dog
mark this moment down.
Today, hasn't it?
Listen, the press called it Atalanta's best performance. So this isn't the most deserved defeat. That was also a very deserved defeat against Atalanta, because they were, I think that was just a men against boys as well, you know. But like you said, you know, like against Juve, they played immensely well and they had so many players missing. Against Inter, the other defeat, I guess, of this year is because they won a man down, you know. So you can maybe give... And against Spezia, I mean, you're up against a world-class tactician. It can happen, you know? But I do think that when you're right, Nikki, I agree, Calabria, you really felt the absence of Calabria. In fact, I was like looking over when they've had bad performances, and actually he really is a problem. Like when he's not there, it's not the same. But I do feel like actually this came at exactly the right moment, because sometimes what happens with teams when they win a lot is that they might get a little bit like, oh, you know, like Juve is now when they lose to like a Benevento side, you know, they just, they don't recognize the opponent. You still need to work hard. And maybe they just got a little bit arrogant about everything. And so this is a slap in the face, I think, at just the right time, just before the derby. And I think that maybe, you know, because they've been overexerting themselves to cover up the lack of quality due to all the absences, that, you know, the absence of Çanakkale, the absence of Benacer, quality players in which you don't have to work three times as hard, trying to switch back to quality play rather than hard work has sort of shifted them a little bit. But if they work, you know, I know it's Red Star, they have to, like, you know, it's a big game in the Europa League, but I think it might have just come at the right time to sort them out.
It's like when you trip up and then you just style it out and pretend it didn't happen. Maybe that's what this is here. This is like the footballing version. But Nikki, kick us off with the Spezia love then.
Yeah, I was like, maybe they could say something else about Milan, but I don't want to. I want to talk about Spezia. And Mina has been our resident Spezia proponent.
And you are jumping on that bandwagon now.
And we're all following her on there. So Mina, props to you for being first on this one. I actually think that in itself is something that I was thinking about the last day or so when I've had more time to reflect on this game. And I was thinking why I have been hesitant to talk a lot about Spezia before. And part of it, just being honest from my side of things, I felt like I didn't understand them as a team, because I would watch them and every time I watched them, it was something different. I was like, okay, here's Italiano. Here's this manager who is being touted as the next big thing is coming. And what's this idea? Where's the idea that I can see? And it's, I think, only clicked for me just now that actually the idea is precisely the fact that it hasn't just been one idea. He has been unbelievably flexible. They've gone through 34 players so far this season. You think about the Milan game, the star player of that game for me is Kevin Agudelo, who's playing his second ever game as a false nine. So it's not like in the past I was able to look at this team and go, it's this guy or this guy, because it's always been someone different this whole season. It's someone, oh, I've got some other idea. This guy could play as a false nine for us. He's not played there before in his career. He's 22 years old. And he keeps doing this. And what you can see is these sort of underpinning principles. Again, we're talking about nuance, because I think when we talk about ideas like, oh, the high press, people want to go straight to, oh, the gegenpress, this sort of Jurgen Klopp-esque idea, we're all going to assault. I thought Spezia's press in this game was so intelligent, so thoughtful. It wasn't about sending everyone all the time. It was about picking one player to go and press the ball and making sure that all the passes were closed off. And it wasn't even like it was one person doing all the pressing. It could be Gyasi, it could be Agudelo, it could be Ricci. And they did that and they combined it with this really, really effective caging job by Ricci midfield and Erlich on defence on Çalhanoğlu. There were so many individually brilliant, intelligent things going on. And I think that's the narrative, actually, with Spezia. It isn't one player. It isn't one idea. Go game to game, and you see a manager who's making plans that fit for each opponent.
And speaking of the personnel, I mean, we all cover Serie A. It's our job. And I think a lot of Serie A experts, honestly, would have seen this Spezia team before the season and said, right, them and Crotone are going down, because they hardly have any top flight experience. I know they just added Ricky Saponato, who's one of my low-key favorite players when he's healthy. I still have flashbacks of him at Empoli under Sarri and how good he was. Kevin Agudelo, a youngster on loan who's looked really good and lively and technical with the ball at his feet. But most players on that team are either coming from smaller leagues or Serie B. This is not a team that is like Benevento under Pippo Inzaghi, that they actually got Serie A quality players in every position and really added. People know what it's like to play in Serie A and to stay up in Serie A. So Vincenzo Italiano and what he's doing with Spezia, I think, would be one of the greatest salvation efforts that we've seen from a team that before the season, I mean, just look at the odds of them going back down to Serie B. It wasn't pretty. I mean, they were right there in the bottom with Crotone in terms of the least talent. So he's been able to squeeze the most that he can out of this group and to do it interchangeably as well. As you said, Nikki's the most impressive thing of all, because it's not like they've relied on you know, this goal scorer who's come in. And yes, they've had like Mbola Nzolo who's scored mm-hmm. almost a goal a game. That's great. But they've interchanged all the different parts throughout the formation so well and still been a team that has given trouble to teams that should be really blowing them out of the water. It's one of the really nice stories, I think, the true Cinderella story this season.
I mean, you look at the fact that they had Nzola, who's out, Galabinov, Piccoli, now Agudelo playing as a false number nine, you know. You know, one of the reasons why we love Ivan Juric so much is because every year his team gets dismantled and every year he still produces magic. One of the reasons we love Mauricio Pochettino when he was in Espanyol is every year his team would get disassembled and taken away and sold off, and he would find a way to still recreate a beautiful team that played good football and tried to do the best it can. But what I love is most of the time when you are a team that's at risk and you're just trying to get enough points to save yourself, you have to make sacrifices sometimes. And that is either you play very defensive football and it's boring, or you play very offensive football and just sacrifice the back end of it. You know, sometimes Sassuolo do that, right? And because we want to see their attacking play, so they'll take a few defensive risks. Atalanta do that as a big club. You know, a lot of clubs do that. But what I like about this team is that I do think it has a lot of balance, because Italiano has been really influenced by so many coaches, but he doesn't have an idol. A lot of the way that he's played is always focused around many of De Zerbi's ideals, actually. That's probably the closest that I can say. But he also loves the one-on-one duels. You know, he knows how to play defensive when need be. I loved how they shut off Calhanoglu and sort of really neutralized any impact that he would have on this match. And that's what I think that he does so well. I think Esteves, who I don't think gets enough of you know, no one raves about him as much. He's tactically so intelligent. But I also want to say it's not just Italiano. This team in general, the way that it's been run, how they have balanced the team when it comes to personalities, how they have the smallest salary is 20 million for the entire squad. That doesn't even come near what Ronaldo makes on his own for you. And it's a team that has all types of personalities, you know, players that are technically gifted, players that are tactically intelligent. And this is what I mean by you have to all work together. It's not just the fact that you've got this guy who comes in and tells them to be courageous on the ball. He asks you, he talks to you one by one. What's your fear in football? What is it you're scared of doing? That's what I love, his communication. A lot of the times we have really great tacticians or really great man managers, but he combines the two so well. He speaks to you about what your fears are, and he takes them away one by one and allows you to just go there and say, you know, go on and just do what you want. And that's why they can play against teams like Milan and win. They have won against Napoli. They won against Sampdoria. They're just honestly, I mean, Conte went down to five men against him when he was playing Inter. This is a side that has literally terrified every opponent they have played against. So we rave about De Zerbi, but it's all about Italiano.
Before we move on, can we just all admit the reason we want La Spezia to stay up in Serie A? It's because we all want to go work on location in La Spezia.
Yes.
Go to Cinque Terre. It's one of the most scenic places in the world.
Maybe that's it. They're living the good life and it's translating onto the pitch. Go on, Nikki.
That's one great reason to want them to stay up. Another great reason. Look, this is the Serie A Awesome podcast, and sometimes we just have to stop and acknowledge why this is such an awesome league to cover.
Thank you.
And where else do you get a goal celebration that involves a player, Saponara, who has some previous, by the way, of getting naked himself in football stadiums, pulling down the pants of his teammate Maggiore and spanking him after that first goal. So that was a colourful moment. And it's just put me in mind, actually, of one tiny last thing I wanted to talk about with Milan, because a Swedish journalist actually wrote to me just today saying, I love the Serie Awesome podcast. Thank you very much for saying that. And also, they wanted to know, they said, don't you guys think it's crazy that Milan are going to let Zlatan go off and do the Sanremo festival, which is a big music festival, which he's going to be helping out with the hosting of, for 5 days in March in the middle of this title push?
It's true. And Capello said the same thing. Capello said the same thing. Pandemic. He went mad. Yeah. He went mad and he said, you
Zlatan
can't
does
it.
What Zlatan wants.
Yeah, I'd like to add something.
It's like Dennis Rodman going to Las Vegas during the title. Well,
but who's the Jordan who goes to get him back?
Not quite Las Vegas is going to San Remo. Exactly. It's not Calhanoglu, the way that Zlatan not. Just gives
Maybe
him those
Donnarumma
dirty looks.
Be that.
I don't know if anyone's going to go and take him away.
Just wanted to add, too, because of what you mentioned twice, the Derby Mina. There are already reports that Italiano is being lined up by Sassuolo for next season as a replacement for him. So that's one for us to keep our eye on. And
I mean, he beats Sassuolo. I mean, whatever deserves job that he gets, Italiano should get better, in my opinion. Sorry.
Now for the leaders, and it shows you the setup and what was at stake for Inter when we've just discussed what happened with the likes of Juve and Milan losing out in their game. So it was over to them to make their match against Lazio count, and they did. It finished 3-1 to Inter. They shrugged off the pressure. They got the job done. Their reward was top spot in the table. What are we going to take away from this one? Who wants to start?
Sure, I'll start, unless someone else wants to. I thought it was a really, really important win for Inter. It feels like a really bland, mundane thing to say, but nevertheless, I think lots of people who have watched Serie A these last few seasons will be familiar with this repeating story of, oh, and then in the critical moment when Juventus did drop points, the team that was supposed to be pushing with them did as well. And the day before, we saw Milan with this great opportunity, bigger on paper than Inter's, right? You're playing the team, and we've given our love to Spezia, but they were 16th in the table. Milan did not take that opportunity. Inter had this game against the Lazio side that had won six games straight, that was really tearing up the table and looked like it was motoring back into those Champions League places. And they took that opportunity. And look, there was a certain amount of good fortune, I think, not in the decision of the penalty, which was 100% correct. And I did not think it was when I first saw it. So hats off to referee Michael Fabbri, who did not even need VAR to see the Wesley Hurt had caught Lautaro. But I think the timing of that penalty was quite fortunate for Inter, because we've said it all season, the way that Inter want to play, the way that Conte wants to play, is to have an opponent that has to come forward and gives you the space to play that fast break football, which Lazio might not have chosen to do. They might have preferred not to do it. But once they did, once they had to, Inter were perfectly primed to take advantage of it. Yeah. A huge performance from Lukaku again. We were just saying last week, actually, he hadn't had such a good game against Juventus, but this was enormous. The goals, the first two, but I think even more than the goals, frankly, the moment that will stay with me from this match is his assist on the third goal, where he just makes Parolo look like a rag doll trying to run alongside him.
Honestly,
Matteo made Jürgen Klinsmann laugh here on air.
No, because I said Parolo wasn't fast when he was 20. He's certainly not fast when he's in his mid-30s. And he's playing as a center back when he's a career central midfielder. And in that moment, there's someone made the comment, which I found hilarious, that it was like two boxers in completely different weight divisions, where one is so clearly outmatched. And you knew when you saw Romelu look up, you could actually see salivation from having Marco Parolo in front of him. It's like, oh, this is the easiest position I've ever been in. Just dink the ball forward. You're going to beat him 100 times out of 100. There's no question about that. And then he squares the ball beautifully to Lautaro Martinez. Romelu Lukaku, for all this ridiculous hate about his first touch, which is, to me now, it's almost like, oh, Messi, he can't do it in the air. His right foot's not great. Or Ronaldo, he's only got a 12-pack, not a 24-pack. It's like you're picking apart players that are so brilliant for what they do well. No player is perfect. Romelu Lukaku's touch isn't actually poor. It's not the greatest, but we've seen it time and time again now in the last two seasons that it's good enough to link up with Lautaro Martinez. It's good enough for them to do these 1-2s and get in behind, and for Romelu Lukaku to be one of the most brutally efficient players in the league, who often looks unstoppable. And that was a big game, by the way. So put that stupid narrative aside as well. That was a massive game to go top of the table against the Lazio side that finished in the top four last season. Another great note, Christian Eriksen started second straight game starting and played well. Good movement. Maybe not the same player we saw Tottenham. He would sometimes drop back. He would go out wide. But I liked how he was on the ball. And I feel like it just gives Inter a different dimension. Even if they look more offensive on paper, still the same Inter we know. It's still a devastating counterattacking side, but it has much better passing just because Eriksen's in there.
firstly, like, I've picked up a lot on your ridiculous statements on how people are ridiculous about his first touch and were ridiculous to say it doesn't make a difference in the big matches. They're not ridiculous because every player, as he grows up, you're going to be criticized for not doing things. Ronaldo was criticized for not doing it in the big matches, and then he improved that particular skill of his and started to do it in the big matches. I think that you have to learn as you grow older, and then you make your name in the big matches. It's been noted about the fact that when, you know, I've said this before, and I will not back down in the sense that, you know, if you make your name in the big matches, you can be a great player. But I think this was a great big game for him, and he was exceptional. And I think that this is where we do have to compliment him, because this is more than I've seen him do a lot. And he's grown from having playing with his back to goal. He's superb when he was at Inter. And I think that it's important to note when a player does well, and it's important to note where he's grown as well in that particular way. And I think that's a particular skill that he's done immensely at in Inter, is playing with his back to goal, is bringing other players in there, is being the guy that can really help Lautaro Martinez. Because when Sanchez plays again alongside Lautaro Martinez, it doesn't work as well, because that's what Lukaku has grown in. And I think he's growing in his first touch, and he has his moments, but it's making the difference in the big matches that we want to see. And this was a huge match with all the pressure on him. This, for me, was wow. And I feel like it's important to note that as well, when a player does really come into light and make the difference when it matters. And I think that this was a game that I can really turn around and say, yeah, I was critical of you against Juventus. I was critical of you in the Coppa Italia when you got so burned by Ibra. Why were you reacting like this? You know, and he came out of that. He came in the second half. He smiled. These are all growing moments. And this is why I can tell you, I'm very optimistic about how much further he can grow, because he's proving himself. And it's documenting his actual emergence. He's still not even at the age where you are at your peak. So knowing that he has the capacity to keep building upon this talent is what makes me hopeful of all of these things. And I think this was a game in which also Inter grew. Last year, they played in exactly the same time in February as well. And what I noticed at that time is that Inter were exposed for being a bully, and Lazio showed the brilliance of their creativity in midfield. It was all about Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto. And on this occasion, that was completely taken apart. And Nicky has spoken so much about the fact that the defense had caused so many problems for Inter. But you know what they have now? They have the right balance. So the wingers can, or the wing backs, whatever you call them, Ashraf Hakimi and Perisic, can be offensive, but they are also very good at providing that balance to them now that the defense has managed to put in perfect performances. This was a very good defensive game from Inter as well. Very good offensively. I think across the park, they had that vertical edge with Eriksen. They knew how to be lateral when needed to be. They knew when to keep possession. They knew when to compress. They knew when to stretch. This was massive, in my opinion, against Lazio, because Lazio are, for me, one of the best playing sides in Italy. The way that they control the ball is so fantastic. The quality of their midfield is so fantastic. They're one of the few sides that don't stop when they have the ball to then look around and deliver a pass. They go. They just go, and it all reaches feet. It's all perfect passing all the time. And this was massively interrupted by an Inter side that knew when to defend, how to defend, how to play as a team. I think it's wonderful that Vidal wasn't playing, frankly speaking, because I love the mixture of Brozovic and Eriksen, not because all these guys aren't good, but because this is a great mixture. With Barella on front, I think there's such wonderful balance there. With Perisic actually, let's say, sacrificing a little bit for his side, this was wonderful. And I do think Conte wanted to come out. I think that he's had enough of everything that's being said about him and delivered a game and the right tactics and the perfect plan for him. It was obviously helped, I much agree with that, by the penalty. I don't necessarily think that their game was stupendous, but I think it was a game that was predatory, that was of a winning team that's going to take their chances and bury you with all your mistakes.
I love that word predatory for it. I really love that word predatory. I think that's such a great word to describe the performance. I just wanted to sort of quickly expand on the Eriksen thing, because both of you mentioned it. I think that was definitely one of the keys to this game. And I think the sense of him integrating, again, maybe this is too much of our journalistic narratives that we've talked about this game, but the fact that he gives a halftime interview and does it in Italian, it's one of those little sort of feelings in the middle of a big game that he plays well. Interesting role, I thought. It's like halfway between the mezzala that he's tried to be at times and helping Brozovic with a regista role, with the deep line playmaking role. But the fact that he did that in the middle of this performance. It felt significant, this game for Eriksen. And I don't think that Eriksen is going to be the piece who we look at and go, oh, this one player transformed the season. But I think it matters that he can be part of this last part and be another option for them.
Exactly. And in a January transfer signing when Inter didn't do anything, we could use the old Adriano Galliani quote that it was like having a new signing.
Yeah.
Is actually introducing Christian Eriksen into the formation. And I feel like this has actually been his welcome party. That now everyone's come to grips with, okay, this is someone who actually can work under Antonio Conte. Yes, he has to change a little bit in terms of his position. He's playing a lot deeper than he ever did with Tottenham in the Premier League. But I'm glad that for once we're not criticizing Inter, because there's no team, and I've said it before on this podcast, there's no team that is top of the table that has received the abuse that Inter has received, that has received the criticism, both about the manager and about so many things behind the scenes, questions about the plan B, when the plan A can win you a Scudetto, by the way. And I remember covering Pep Guardiola's Barcelona that played in one way. They played one way and it was brilliant. And I'm not comparing this into Barcelona.
I don't think people could criticize an Inter too much if they were playing that way every week.
That's exactly the point. Thank you, Kay. That's exactly the point that I was coming to, is that because Inter's plan A is a very different kind of football than the one that people want to see, which is, you know, Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, you think of in the 21st century, that's the side that we want to play like, because it was brilliant to watch. It was incredible. And Inter, the opposite. Inter, a very good counterattacking side that's not going to commit too many bodies forward. And that plan A right now, despite the trend in football, which is to go towards more attack-minded formations and play more open, they're kind of doing it the old school way. And if every team played like Barcelona, it wouldn't be fun anymore, because this is what gets us talking, is the tactical variations. I'm loving it that the plan A is working and it is Catenaccio. Great. Bring Catenaccio back.
But you're now saying, like, oh my God, I can't believe we ever criticized this team. How can we have not seen their brilliance?
I'm not saying that, but it is.
No, just like you don't want to draw conclusions from Milan's loss to Spezia. You can't all of a sudden make this team like the world's greatest because they won against Lazio either.
But I'm just saying that they should. We've criticized them. And honestly, times, of course, we have to criticize them.
Rightfully so, they're out of two competitions.
Right.
They're easy to criticize because it's the way that they play. It's not because of the results. It's the way they play that draws criticism.
I think Conte says that.
Of course, because he's a fiery character. He hasn't helped himself at times, but it seems like things are a little bit better. There's no Thursday excuses anymore.
All right.
May I also say, it's the fact that they are out of two competitions. They have a week to prepare. So again, I don't see this as, this is another thing. You know, now they're going to have a whole week to prepare when poor Milan have to play on Thursday night in the Europa League. You're out of the Coppa Italia, you're out of the Champions League, and you have the squad depth of pretty much the best of all of them, except for Juventus. So all criticism, I'm sorry, Matteo, is fully deserved at this point.
A week to prepare. Now, with the consistency,
you have to win against Milan. You have to win against, you know, your Crotones and your Spezias and all of them. And then you can say to you,
Nino, we've talked about this before, with the caveat that it was once a week when all the other teams have to play twice. And they're knocked out of the Coppa Italia, but they win the Scudetto. That's still a massively successful season.
Yeah.
That it's not that being knocked out of those two competitions.
First
of all, they
weren't going to
win the Champions League, okay? If they win the Scudetto after 9 seasons straight of Juventus, I mean, this is why we do this podcast. We care about the Scudetto winners. Winning the Scudetto after this dynasty that Juventus has had in the whole 2010s, in that whole decade, is a remarkable achievement.
Milan winning it is a remarkable achievement.
No,
Inter winning it is an achievement.
The squad is huge. They were still the favourites until proven otherwise.
It's the derby this weekend. It's the Milan derby. It's the Derby della Madonnina. What are you expecting from it? What's your prediction?
I'm so excited about this derby, and I have this little tinge of sadness with it as well, which is, of course, the same thing that's going to make us sad all season, which is the empty stadiums. Mm. I think it's hard to overemphasize what this derby is in recent history. First of all, ties into what we've just been talking about. Last point on Inter and what this win meant. This is the first time that Inter have been top of the table at the end of a round of games in the second half of a season since 2010, when they won the treble. Okay, so it's been a long time since Inter have been in the driving seat. And they've had some chances along the way. So this is the first time they've taken that opportunity to get into the driving seat at this point of a season. But they're in the driving seat, and the team in second is Milan, their neighbors, the team that shares San Siro. It's such an amazing setup. On top of that, throw in the fact they just played, I mean, it was a few weeks ago, but it feels like 2 minutes ago in the Coppa Italia, and it was the spiciest game that you can imagine. You've got a new mural just outside San Siro that someone has painted of Ibrahimovic and Lukaku going at each other. It's mouthwatering. It makes you so excited. And I just wish we had the choreography and everything.
Oh, else can you imagine the Curva Nord and the Curva Sud, 90,000?
Do you have a favorite, Nikki?
I think for me right now, it's Inter. I think exactly as has just been talked about, a full week to prepare. I think it's such an advantage. And in no way at all should this be construed as master planning, because I think Conte didn't do something deliberate. The players certainly didn't do something deliberate to go out of the Champions League, right? They just weren't good enough. But it may just work out for them to put them in the best position to go ahead and win this league title.
But hold on, Nikki, because we're recording this before Milan's game against Cervena Zvezda.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be a second string team, because if you're in punching distance from the Scudetto, as Milan, obviously Milan have been top. And
in
now
the Europa League, you think it's going to be a second string team.
Of course, it has to be. I'm sorry. You cannot go full strength and then have the biggest game of the season to reclaim top of the table. There's going to be wholesale changes. So a lot of the players starting against Inter this weekend, is my best guess, will not have played any significant minutes on Thursday.
It's still disruptive to have to go and deal with.
No, I'm not saying it is, but I'm expecting a second string team for Milan.
So two for Inter. Mina, what do you say?
Listen, I think that Ibrahimovic has a point to prove. And I'm always scared of players like him and of his caliber when they have a point to prove. I think he's really upset with himself with the way that he behaved in the Coppa Italia. I think he hates that he came out as the villain in that, and that he's had his head held down. He's gotten criticism from Fabio Capello over the weekend. It's all coming out against him. And I think that he wants to make a statement, and he's a very good player at making a statement. But I do think a week to prepare, you know, the disruption of the Europa League, just the traveling alone, or the preparation alone, it's difficult. So I think it could be a draw, and that would be perfect for me.
Listen, we've got to wrap it up because we're going over here. I just want to do a very quick mention, because we mention them every week. Roma get 3 goals, 3 points against Udinese, and they are still third in the table. So we will be talking about them more next week, no doubt. But that is it for the latest edition. Enjoy the derby this weekend. We can't wait to get into it next week. Ciao for now.